This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Didn't even go live. Hold on. I do it again.
All right.
Okay. It was so good the first time.
Oh, there we go.
I'm the man who has the ball. I'm the man who can throw it faster than... So that is why I am better than everyone in the world. You've reached the end of the
set. All right. Welcome in to Tigers Radio Pod here at MotorCityBengals.com. I'm Ray Hillicassi. Alongside Ms. Chris Brown and Huper. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher. It's been an interesting last couple days, and I want to thank our friend over in Egypt who sent over an email with some trivia questions. We'll do some trivia this evening. This is for Huper, so I'm actually going to try to test this out on Huper. Huper's going to be like the trial run here. So
the pressure.
So we're going to do some trivia. There is a chance for you, anybody who's listening to the podcast for the first time, I have a Bill Freehand bobblehead, and I'll be giving that to a lucky listener who, there's one couple of people who emailed me about that on tigerssrd@gmail.com. But our gentleman in Egypt gave me some really good constructive feedback, which is all we ask. You know, if you want to leave us a review, we really appreciate that. Reviews, those things, they go a long way. And so one of the things, if you guys notice, I'm deliberately trying to slow down. I tend to talk fast sometimes when I'm nervous, just an old habit. But nevertheless, that's why I got the mic in front of me. So maybe I could just be more conscious of it. But yeah. So anyways, gentlemen, how's it going?
Good.
It's a beautiful day in the great state of Iowa.
Youp, a minor league baseball television star.
Yes.
So, he asked me, he goes, do you think Youper would be mad if I post that? I'm like, I don't think so.
Oh, it's fine.
No, it was just like, it was funny.
Just like, you're just in your habit, you know, like just like chilling.
And it was right before Green hit that home run. And I was rewinding it to get the recording. I'm like, wait a minute, I know him. It's like, all right, I gotta put that out there. So that was fun. You got to see a heck of a game that first game.
Oh, yeah.
Second one was kind of fun too in terms of comeback, but and Green was good in that one too. So yeah, it was a nice chance for you to get out there. I'm curious about your thoughts on these Mud Hens players.
Well, I'll tell you, it was so interesting. You know, my wife and family, we moved here in 2007. And I've been going to a handful of Iowa Cubs games all those years. But, you know, you never really had a rooting interest because I didn't care about the Iowa Cubs. And I was just there to, you know, let my kids eat some ice cream and hug the mascot and, you know, maybe see a couple of prospects that you'd heard of. But really, you just didn't care. So, you know, with their minor league reshuffle and sending Toledo here for the first time this year, it was kind of interesting to be in that park. And especially this year, since the Tigers have, you know, pretty much 70% of their top prospects are on that team. So it was kind of fun to have a real interest in the game and to really take note of what was going on and pay a lot closer attention. So just that part for me was amazingly fun. In terms of the prospects, you know, what's there to say? It's about Tuesday night. You go there to see Torkelson and Green, and they both come out with a home run. They both added a hit and a walk. So that was really, you know, quite the game to see. Torkelson's, what I liked was the difference between the two homers. Torkelson's was kind of a high, majestic shot into right center, whereas Green's was just a missile, a laser, and it was gone. Like before, you hardly had time to digest what was happening. It was gone, you know. So that was pretty fun. And then I was watching Kreidler quite a bit. I wanted to try to, you know, you only get to see two games, and I'll actually be going Saturday too. To see, does he look like a shortstop? I mean, does he have that, you know, that fluid movement that you just see a natural shortstop have? And, you know, it's a two-game sample, but I thought he looked really good. He made some nice plays. He made one incredible play deep in the hole with the Jeter jump throw that was right on the money. And he made all the normal plays too. So fun. Tuesday night especially, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there was a lot of – every time there was a Kreidler highlight, though, there was somebody like, well, make sure the Tigers still sign a shortstop. But da-da-da-da-da was always the same – almost predictable, but it was good to see like, for example, even St. Paul, the Saints, which are brand new, they were an independent league team for a while. And now they're the Minnesota Twins AAA team after they were at Rochester for a little while. I think Rochester's Washington now, I believe. I think they're the Nationals. Yeah. I think. I'm 100% sure about that. But either way, to give you an opportunity to watch the Tigers and to have all that talent there in the background in your own backyard where you're not blacked out for once. I mean,
yeah, that was a home run for me. I mean, just the fact that, you know, Torkelson and Green are on that team right now. But then the second tier of guys, Paredes and Kreidler and Cameron and, Clemens, you don't get to see a AAA roster like that too often. Usually there's a lot of filler guys who've been in the major leagues and are hanging on for dear life, you know. Wednesday's game started out slow. I mean, the Cubs had a guy named Ryan Kellogg pitching. He had like 15 strikeouts and 32 innings coming into the game. He had all the looks of someone they should mash around. And he befuddled them for several innings. he struck out Torkelson a couple times. He struck out Green, made Green look really bad. Then the Mudhens broke out in the eighth against a relief pitcher and won the game. Green had a sizzling line drive in that rally as well. Torkelson had his only good thing was he walked on the day. Otherwise, he had three Ks. Green also hit a fly ball off the center field wall that would have been gone any day of the year, but that one, because the wind was blowing in. That was actually a pretty impressive swing. So Wednesday's game probably wasn't quite as fun, but it was still very fun. I mean, it was a good time. It's just been good to know that if all goes well, we'll never see Torkelson and Green here again.
If all goes well, or it depends on your take on that too, but you kind of wonder what would Toledo be if they had starting pitching, because right now they're trailing 4-0 here in the top, heading into the top of the fourth right now. But they have so much. This is the most offensive stacked Toledo team I've seen in quite some time that I can remember.
Yeah,
there's no weak spots.
Even Paredes yesterday, he started out 3-for-3. Three bullets. I mean, on Tuesday night, he was taking a lot of pitches. He was mad at the umpire because the umpire was giving the Iowa Cubs guy the outside corner and maybe a little off the corner. And pretty much all the Mudhens right-hand batters were looking at that ump with daggers. And Paredes was at the top of the list. And he had a couple Ks, and they were mostly Ks looking, and he wasn't pleased. He came out on Wednesday swinging the bat and put some real good swings on a couple balls.
Speaking of swinging the bat really well, Ray Rivera just went deep again for the Whitecaps. Nice. And so he was named the high – pardon me?
Number 18 on the year.
Number 18 on the year. He was named the High A Central Player of the Week last week. For the week he's had, he's put together a pretty good stretch here again. Based off some of the, like, we examined some of the swing mechanics earlier. You can find our YouTube channel. And they seem to be taking effect. So, but in terms of week this week, the Tigers lost 2 out of 3 against Pittsburgh. Miguel Cabrera had 4 hits yesterday, which really helped them save one in against a Pirates team that really offensively has some offensive struggles. But again, the Tigers are, it's almost kind of, again, with the way it's kind of going into September, Matt Manning took a pitch to the knee at 100 and something miles an hour, and they just come in kind of battered a little bit. But again, the Tigers have been resilient throughout the series, throughout the year, but it's coming down to the stretch here. They have the Rays coming into town this weekend, a very good Devil Rays. I almost said it's a Devil Rays, but it's almost a force of habit. I can't help it. I call them the Devil Rays, but Miguel Cabrera had a classic Miguel Cabrera like game, 4 hits yesterday, which we'll get to. And then the Hall of Fame. Well, you know, I know Chris and I have always kind of make a big deal about we sort of not make a big deal about the Hall of Fame. We go, and then we end up talking about it for 20 minutes. But in this case, it depends on your opinion of these players. We'll get to that a little bit as well in just a few minutes, because you had Derek Jeter, also a Ted Simmons, who was from this area, who actually went to Southfield High School, I think Southfield Lathrop, I believe, and Larry Walker, one of my favorite Expos of all time, one of my favorite, just the all-around, just he had a SpongeBob pin and all the fans went nuts. So it's quite an impressive Hall of Fame class. And of course, the late, great Marvin Miller, who pretty much stopped indentured servitude for the players. So, I mean, it's in all fairness, at some point you wish that hopefully someday soon that Curt Flood, who sacrificed his career, gets the kind of same kind of plaque in Cooperstown because he definitely deserves it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have seen it. There, Bob Costas has a show on HBO again for the first time in I don't know how many years.
Is it Costas Tonight again?
I think so. I think it's Costas Tonight some more. But he's got, you know, he does his thing. He's got Bonnie Jones on there, and he has some interesting topics. But he had his editorial, and he was talking about Marvin Miller going into the Hall of Fame, and he said, and you know, Costas is basically a baseball historian. You know, he said baseball has. There's a way to put somebody in there immediately. Like it's a special thing that they did. I'm trying to remember who they did it. They might've done it with Buck O'Neill.
Yeah. I believe they did it with Roberto Clemente as well.
Yeah. It's not necessarily putting him in the Hall of Fame, but it's some other designation. That's even more rare. It's actually, I think it's called the Buck O'Neill Award. Now that I think about it, but he was basically saying now was the perfect time to do it for Curt Flood, because you're putting Marvin Miller in there and those two of them are inextricably linked. And it's kind of odd because, you know, we look back at Curt Flood as the groundbreaker, but he lost his Supreme Court case and he wasn't the one to, you know, break into free agency or whatever. It was a couple other guys, but I thought it was an interesting take, and it was one, I don't know if it's out there online, but people should seek it out because I agree with it. It's like, you know, this is, if you're trying to remember baseball history, that's one of the biggest things of all time. So he should be memorialized in that way somehow.
It was fun to see. Actually, there were some players wearing Flood t-shirts this week.
Good.
Flood the Hall or whatever it said on it.
Yeah. Well, last thing Roger wants to hear is about flooding, but
yeah. from the city standpoint, yeah. But there's the HBO documentary on Curt Flood was one of the best pieces of baseball pieces of history I've ever seen, because it just showed a lot about what he. I mean, he had to go to France to just kind of hide out a little bit, and where he was socially accepted as a black man, and just. He didn't want to go to Philadelphia because at the time Philadelphia had this racist sort of attitude with it. And so it was just, it kind of was the beginning of the end of what for the owners in terms of just free ride of having all players at what they want. And mm-hmm. I really think that again, also he's remembered in a different way for that play, the misplay in game seven of the World Series. Game seven. And
Jim Northrop.
The Jim Northrop, yep, the Jim fly ball, the center that Flood misjudged. He got a lot of crap for that, and I didn't think that was fair because Flood was a really good defensive center fielder, and between him and Lou Brock, and that outfield alone for the Cardinals is one of the all-time best stacked outfielders out there.
You know, the sad part about that play is the TV coverage in those days was still in black and white, and it was brutal, and they had color television then, which I don't understand. But
was that the last World Series? That was the last World Series that was in black and white, though, right?
I believe it was. Yeah, insane that they hadn't converted yet, and that they didn't have more cameras. I mean, it's the World Series, and it was the biggest thing in the world at that time,
right?
So, I think he gets a bad rep about catching that ball. You know, I think maybe obviously he misjudged it. That's fine,
right?
But people talk like he would have had it in his hip pocket if he'd taken the right route. I don't think that's the case. I think he just would have had a chance to catch it. You know, I don't think it's a done deal that he catches that ball.
No, yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it. Didn't he just take a false step and then slip, was trying to get back? Yeah. Wasn't that the issue? Because I remember Curtis Granderson did the same thing in the 2006 World Series, and people were like, oh, it's karma from the universe. And it was like, no, it's been raining for 4 days.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's one of those things where for Curt Flood, in terms of even that Game 7 moment, too, he had a pretty good series otherwise. I mean, he kept burning the Tigers the entire time, from my understanding of it.
Northrop, I think, I always feel Northrop gets a little robbed by that. They say Flood blew it.
Yeah.
You know, Northrop stung it pretty good.
Yeah. So, let's see. So, and yeah, that so was...
Ted Simmons, by the way, was selected via the Modern Baseball Committee, which is the same committee that Lou Whitaker will hopefully be nominated on, I believe next year. I think next year he gets on the crack at it. So hopefully they will correct their ways with that, as he has a 75.1 WAR, which is, I think, the highest among second basemen not elected in the Hall of Fame.
It, it may be the highest among non-steroid people in the Hall of Fame, unless maybe Bill Dahlin or somebody like that is ahead of him. Some rando. Yeah, it's I know it's a weird thing where I think WAR has helped his case later. So yeah, it looks like Lolich hit a home run in game two. That was yeah, I don't know. I Ted Simmons, handsome gentleman, by the way. I was he reminded me was looking a little bit like Roadhouse era Sam Elliott out there. Don't hurt. And he had some really nice words to say about Al Kaline, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He said Al Kaline was a heavy influence on him.
So yeah, it was kind of a Michigan themed Hall of Fame ceremony. You got Jeter, you got Simmons, you got Larry Walker from Canada, which is of course the Upper Peninsula.
Yes.
And
yeah. Yeah, for Rocky. I mean, he went in as a Rocky or Expo? That's I can't remember right now. I think it was a Rocky.
Yeah.
Which I think he's the first Rocky to be in the Hall, then elected to the Hall of Fame, I believe.
That would make sense. I can't think of anybody else who would.
Elton's not in, right?
No.
Nope. So there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, Larry Walker is in. So
he might be the last one for a while too.
Wait, this is going.
It looked like Tulo was going to get there, but.
So anybody who's listening online, by the way, I wanted to thank our friend Daniel is the gentleman from Egypt, the trivia questions, but I'm going to go ahead and ask you for a series of questions. And if this is the reason why I'm doing this is so anybody who's listening in the audience right now, if you want to participate in trivia, baseball trivia, Tigers trivia, leave a comment, let us know next show and we'll pick you and then you get a chance to win a cool prize. So Youper, are you ready for your question?
Shoot, let's go.
All right, because I'm doing this because I wanted to catch you totally 100% on it. So, yeah, our friend Daniel out of Egypt, he tuned in our podcast, and where Chris, I found out how you already listened to us already. So,
the Pharaoh.
We're gonna call it Daniel the Pharaoh. Here we go. Jack Morris led the Tigers in win every season between 1979 and 1988. Mm-hmm. Which pitcher led the team in wins in 1978 before Morris' streak started, and which Tiger pitcher finally beat out Morris for team wins in 1989, ended Morris' 10-year run as a team leader in wins.
1978 would be. I'm trying to think what year Jim Slayton pitched for the Tigers. I think that might have been 79. So, with that being the case, obviously wasn't. Was it Jim Slayton?
5 seconds.
Jim Slayton.
Correct on 1978. Jim Slayton. Nice job there, Youper. Oh, wow. All right. So, but what about 1989? Who broke his streak? 1989.
Oh.
This one should be easier.
Really?
The first one I didn't get. I admit it. When I first looked at that question, I had no idea. The second one I got.
89, they were terrible.
Yep.
So it was probably someone with like 8 wins. Eric King.
Mike Hedeman, 11 wins. I thought you'd get that one. Wow. I really thought you would get that one.
Ah.
All right. So I'll give you one more trivia question, and then we'll move on to our or Chris, you know what? No, I gave you those questions, right? You didn't look at them, did you?
I didn't look at them. No, I have no. Okay. I was on those ones. I was going to guess Dave Rosma and Frank Tanana. So I don't think I would have.
Rosma is a good guess. I mean,
yeah. All right. So
I thought he had a good rookie year, but I don't remember what year it was.
I'll ask you guys both this question, and you guys give me your answers here, respectively. This should be okay. I'm going to give you an easy one. Which Tiger pitcher started the season with 13 straight wins? Which Tiger pitcher started the season with 13 straight wins?
Started the season.
13 straight wins. I'm going to go with,
You guys want choices or no?
I'm going to go with Hal Newhouser.
Chris?
That's who I was thinking too, but for fun, we'll say Mark Fedrich.
You guys are wrong. I can't believe you guys got this wrong. Max Scherzer, 2013.
Oh, geez, I don't remember that. I remember Ubaldo Jimenez going like 15-0 for some reason, but I don't remember Schuster doing that at all.
All right, here's another question.
Well, this trivia, you're naturally inclined to go back a bit, I think. That's my excuse.
Yeah.
That's fair. You put us 100% fair. Okay, I'll give you this. What's up?
For whatever reason, the Max Scherzer era as a Tigers pitcher feels kind of like a fever dream to me. Like he was always like, even when he won the Cy Young, it was like, yeah, this is Verlander staff. And you know, I don't know why. I just never paid attention to all his accomplishments on the Tigers. It was fun watching him, but yeah, I've just forgotten.
I miss Max so much.
I do too. Love that guy.
All right. So here we go. Who was the first Tiger pitcher to throw 300 strikeouts in a season? Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, Danny McLean, or Mickey Lolich?
My initial thought was Lolich.
I'll go with McLean in the 31 win year.
Chris, you're correct. Mickey Lolich, 1972.
Is he the only one?
He was the first one.
Yeah, but I don't
know. 1971, 1971.
Has anyone other than Lolich done that? I don't think anybody else has.
I don't think so. No, I don't believe so.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty rare company there. Okay, one more, and then we'll move on.
All right.
This is fun actually, because I, for once, I'm not the one. I'm actually answering or seeing the questions. Okay, so. Okay. Here we go. Who was the first Tiger to hit 50 home runs in a season? Miguel Cabrera, Cecil Fielder, Rocky Calavito, or Hank Greenberg?
It's got to be Hank, right? 58?
Yeah, he's 58.
Yep, that's right. 1938. That was okay. That was, yeah, you know what? That was too easy. That was way too easy. Oh, okay. Here's another one. You guys will not get this one, but I mean, it's just fun because I also wanted to Bill James being a snob here, but here you go. Which Tigers team did baseball historian Bill James rank as the greatest outfield in the history of baseball? The history of baseball. The 1935 Tigers, the 1968 Tigers, the 1915 Tigers, or the 1984 Tigers?
I have to go 15. I mean, if Cobb's out there.
Yeah. If you name the other two outfielders, Chris, I'll buy you nachos tomorrow when we go to the game.
Well, I mean, you've got Sox Puffenmeyer and
Sox Puffenmeyer.
I don't know. Was that Heilman and Crawford? I don't know who else was out there. I don't remember.
Well, you got one of them. Crawford. Okay.
Ben Crawford. Yeah.
Yeah, but this one I would never gotten either. The third one for sure. Bobby Veach.
Veach. Oh. Yeah. He's in the Hall of Fame, isn't he?
Yeah, they finished 1, 2, and 3 in RBIs and total bases that season. Again, this is the dead ball era. So, you know, like, for example, a few years back, Ty Cobb led the league in home runs, and none of them were hit over the wall with 9. And that's when they had the balls, and they never changed them out, and just the balls were just looking disgusting after a while. So, okay, no more trivia for that, but thanks for participating. And as far as getting a chance to win the Bill Freehan bobblehead, all you have to do is just leave us a review. If you're listening to the podcast now, just leave us a nice review, good or bad. And actually, you know what? You're not supposed to do that, I guess, apparently. But if you just leave us a comment, leave us a review, and I'll pick somebody at random. And I also have some people in my email about that, too. So, and next time, if you want to participate in trivia, just let us know at tigerssrd@gmail.com. So without further ado, it's kind of a, I don't know, I just wanted to try out trivia. It's been a while. I used to play every week, and since COVID happened, I don't get to play it very often anymore. So it's kind of, I miss doing trivia. It's cool. You guys were good sports about it. So thanks.
No, that was fun.
It's time for Rogelio and Chris to go inside the numbers.
Fire! All right. It's time for inside the numbers. Youper, what is your number this week?
My number is 42, and it has nothing to do with Jackie Robinson, although we love Jackie Robinson. 42 is the combined deficit between first and second place in the 6 divisions. So right now the average division lead is 7 games, which means there are precious few divisional races. And to me, if you're someone who lived through the Tigers fighting with Blue Jays in 87, or the Yankees and Red Sox in 78, or the Braves and Giants in 93, any of those years, you know what that day-to-day September fight for the playoffs feels like. You know, every day it's changing. There's another game, and there's that anticipation. And all of that is gone. I mean, it's almost all gone. I you know, when's the last time you think, oh, man, a division race, that thing's tight. It's good. I mean, we had that one year there with the Rays on the last night. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of fireworks. Was that 2012, 13, whatever that was? Whatever it was, that was great. But that's rare now. Mm-hmm. There used to be divisional races that went down to the wire all the time. And baseball has given that away. They've given up September chasing October money. You know what I mean? They've expanded the playoffs with the wild cards and everything else, watered that down. That kind of ruined September in some ways to try to get a better October. And, you know, have they gotten a better October? I mean, probably could debate. That's another debate, I guess. But they've given away September, in my opinion. And it's kind of sad. I don't know if it's ever going to change. I probably ain't going back. So we'll always have the 87 Tigers in that pennant race. So,
well, I mean, if you look at right now, the NL West is the Dodgers are 2.5 back of San Francisco. And that kind of, for rivalry purposes, that rivalry is intense to the point where people have died of it, literally. And there was a situation where I believe it was a reporter last week.
Susan Slusser,
who had to get escorted to her car by Dodger fans because was Giant fans are harassing her, Chris?
Apparently a very large Giant fan. And she's a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, I believe.
I thought she was covering the A's. But either way, I've heard, and this is, I saw an MLB poll about players poll. They said the worst fans are Giants fans. Wow. I mean, it blows my mind a little bit because you think of like San Francisco had, you know, like where the Grateful Dead are from and had deadheads and all that stuff. But then you also think about their homeless problem. There's literally human feces on the streets and all that jazz. So I don't know. I don't know what to think about San Francisco anymore. But either way, that's a good one. And the NL East, I don't know, gentlemen, the NL East, Uper, that, I don't know about you guys, but it seems like everybody's just like, the Braves.
They're going to see who can out mediocre the other.
Yeah. Right now, the Mets are 4.5 back. They're 4 back. And they're at 70-70. Philadelphia's at 71-68 with 2.5 back of Atlanta. Atlanta's lost their 4-6 in the last 10. Philly's coming out a little bit, but I mean, the run differential for Philly is kind of, Philly gets in the postseason, it's just going to be a quick, you're out. I mean, that's a division title that won't mean much, but the Braves right now hanging on to that, and they really didn't have to do much. And then the next closest team is Miami, and they're 15.5 back, and they're already at 81 losses. So, you're kidding.
Bryce Harper hit another home run tonight for the Phillies.
That's his 30th, correct?
Yeah, but it was a solo shot, and people get mad at him for hitting solo homers because it's his fault his guys didn't get on base in front of him, I guess. But I've never understood he gets the grief over solo homers.
I don't get that either, and he's having a really good season in terms of offensive numbers. All right, Chris, what's your inside number?
My inside number is 11, which is the number of home runs down in the Florida Complex League this year for Manuel Sequeira. And I'm not sure if we've talked about him on this podcast before. I know
we talked about him on the minor league report.
Yeah, before. We talked about the minor league report, and we've tweeted about him a little bit from the minor league account. But for those who don't know, he's soon to be 19. He's an 18-year-old shortstop who signed in the 2019 international class. The Tigers signed, and it was kind of overshadowed because everybody was trying to figure out who Roberto Campos was. He was the big money guy in that class, and Sequeira's from Venezuela, and they never report how much money the Venezuelans get because Venezuelans, I don't know, they don't want people knowing how much money they have.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of political
implications. Yeah, I mean, I think, it's kind of dangerous when you go back home. But yeah. In any event, so those 11 home runs, three of which came in one game last week, are now tied for the third highest single season total ever in the Florida Complex League / Gulf Coast League, at least going back to 2006. I didn't check before then. 2006 is when Fangraphs starts their database, and it's easy to check. The second most ever is 12, and the most ever is 14. Oh. So he's not that far away. I mean, the season ends pretty soon. And I think it's fun to celebrate something like that, but we do need to keep the context. So he's batting just .245, and his strikeout rate is over 30%, which is not what you want down in rookie ball. And I looked at the six other players to hit at least 11 home runs in the league, and they are Eric Arce, who never made it out of rookie ball, Wander Ramos, who made it to low A, Chris Carlson, who was a Tigers minor leaguer, who made it to high A, Abner Abreu, who topped out at high A, another Tigers prospect, Ignacio Valdez, who topped out in high A, and Mason Martin, who is actually in double A right now, and he's a decent prospect for the Pirates. So hitting for a ton of power down there doesn't necessarily guarantee you any success. It is just kind of unusual. One thing I will say, those other six guys were all first baseman or outfielders, and Sequeira is at least technically right now a middle infielder. I have never seen him. I don't know what his body's like. I suspect he's probably a shortstop or a third baseman, probably more like a third baseman. And I also checked the Arizona Complex League. That's basically the equivalent over there in the Cactus League. And they've only had seven players hit 11 plus home runs since 2006, led by Joey Gallo with 18. Which doesn't surprise me. So, yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, it doesn't necessarily guarantee any success, but this is something that only a little more than a dozen people have done in the last 15 years. So I thought it was worth noting.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's one of those things where for a Tigers pitchers and what have, there's not a lot to report home about in the complex about the pitchers. I've seen some of the ERAs and it's kind of a really kind of grim right now at the moment, but nevertheless, outside of him, and then you have Austin Murr, who got his 16 game hitting streak for the Whitecaps now, who just continues to rake. It's a good story among the lower levels, because right now Erie's kind of winding out. Erie, West Michigan all end, and Lakeland all end next week, with Toledo going till the end of September when they end up the end of the season against St. Paul. So they are in town next week against Columbus, so we're going to go into the game hopefully next week. So my inside numbers are 526, 565, and 789, and zero. And those are the numbers from Miguel Cabrera slash line. And he has not struck out in the month of September so far. Not once.
Oh.
I mean, for him, he's got a WRC plus right now of 259. And he's batting over 500. And he's drawn three walks, but he's not struck out yet in September. That's the kind of Miguel Cabrera had a three hit game against Pittsburgh. He had a four hit game back to back. Again, it's Pittsburgh. I understand the level of opponent, but still, second half of the season, he's been hitting. He might fall a little short of 3,000, but it's good to see. You got the double. Almost said it again. The Rays coming into town this weekend, and they have one of the best pitching staffs in the league. And if he does it against them, who knows if anything's possible, but those are the numbers so far for Miguel Cabrera in the month of September. And he's carried the Tigers in a way. And we'll get down that a little bit more with there's an article I'm dropping tomorrow on Candelario finally that I've been. This week's one of those weeks where I'm writing a little bit and I'm just writing back and forth. And so I've been slacking on my writing a little bit, admittedly, but I've been a little busy. But anyway.
It's fine. You've carried the load for a long time here. I finally chipped in with a couple articles, and it was an interesting day after posting my article about Spencer Torkelson.
First and foremost, I want to apologize for my behavior on Twitter. No. I don't let my temper get the best of me, but when somebody calls you lazy, I just get pissed, because that's a lazy take.
Listen,
where does that come from?
I appreciate that. Well, I think he was just saying it was I appreciate you doing that. I stuck up for you in a way that was much more out of bounds last week. I told somebody to F off, basically. And I apologize for that too. I don't get upset when people criticize me, but I get upset when they criticize you guys or other people. And it's just one of those things. It's like, hey, you complain about me, but not my teammates.
Well, I'm the same way. I don't like when people go back after, or the bloggers or the writers have nothing to do. So I have to come up with, yeah, you know what? I have to write 20 articles a month. You try to do that, okay? You try. Let me go to your job, whatever job it is, and criticize you. It's as simple as that. But listen, I like criticism. I don't mind it. It makes me a better person. I really don't. If you're cool about it, we can have a discussion. I was actually talking to somebody based off the conversation we had yesterday, and he was seeing why he saw it that way. And then when he read it again, he goes, you know what? I'm sorry about that. And I apologize to him too.
No. And it's the one thing that I don't get is when people are like, you just, that headline just get people to click on it. It's like, well, yeah, kind of. We want people to read what we write.
Yeah,
like, I don't think I was trying to be misleading with the headline. I think one of the problems, and I understand why people think it's what I wrote. And if you didn't read it, it's fine. I don't care. It's called Lower Your Expectations for Spencer Torkelson. And that sounds like clickbait. Because everybody else in the world, since Torkelson was drafted, has talked about how he's, you know, a 60 hitter with 70 power or better, you know, future MVP caliber player. And we see it all the time, Raj, when we post the videos. We post videos right. of him doing it. And every response is, he's ready, call him up.
Call him up, call him up.
Tiger's going to be so good. And so that's colored my judgment for sure.
And I basically made him out to be Chris Shelton.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I tried... I did my best.
Casey Redux.
So, I mean, that's the thing that, like, when I hesitated, we've been talking about, we've touched on it on the show before, and right. I've mentioned, like, hey, I think, you know, I'm not sure he's the hitter that people think he is. And right. it's something I've thought privately, we've discussed for months and months, but I never came out with it because everybody else in the world disagrees. And it feels like, you know, that I must be wrong here because everybody else sees something. And so I eventually just was like, you know what? I'm going to put it out there because I would hate to have thought this all along and then later on regret not putting it out there. I'd much rather put it out there and be completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm totally cool
with that. It was the right thing to do, Chris. You researched it. You had a case to make. Nothing you said was out of bounds.
Right.
And you're right. It's okay to be a contrarian if you have logic behind it. You're not just being a contrarian to be a contrarian. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was a great piece. Now we just need to figure out if you hate Matt Manning or Spencer Torkelson more.
So I've been very critical of Matt Manning. I admit to that. And you know, one of the things, Torkelson, he's 1-for-3 tonight with 2 strikeouts, but in his first at bat, he had a hard double the opposite way. Now half of his hits have gone the opposite way. So one of my criticisms may be going away. Which I would be totally cool with. I want Torkelson to be like, I look forward to writing articles about Torkelson getting better and better for the next 3 or 4 years. I just, you know, sometimes you have opinions and you got to get them off your chest. But I don't know. Would any benefit to me writing a story that says, hey, Spencer Torkelson's great? especially if I don't believe it.
No, and that's the thing. We've gone to almost 30 or close to 30 minor league games a season. It's not like you're drawing it from an empty pool. And I got to give credit to the first person that said anything. I get, you know, that somebody was contradicting the normal opinion. And that was James Shipman. I mean, James Shipman flat out was like, look, I don't see what the big hype is. I'm not gonna try to quote him directly, but after we went to that first series, it was like, okay, I can see what he's talking about. But then fans are just, people don't want to hear negativity. Tiger fans do not want to hear negativity. And I get it. I understand that. You want to hear all positive things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if there's a case to be made, and you saw him firsthand too now. So it's like all three of us have seen him firsthand. It's different than watching the highlight films that we post on Twitter because you can put Ray Rivera hit 5 home runs in one game. Doesn't matter. Spencer Torkelson could hit a single and fans will just go nuts. And that's fine. But if there's something to be case, if I want him to prove Chris wrong, we all want to prove him wrong. We don't want him. We were not saying he's a bum. And that's some of the comments were just lazy and just like, I just read the headline and did nothing else. And I'm proving it right now. And that's it.
It was really interesting to read the piece and then compare that to what I saw the last 2 days. It was interesting. He never pulled a ball in those 2 games. He didn't even pull a foul ball. You know, okay. Yeah. Everything he hit, the home run was to right center. The sharp single was to right field. All his foul balls were 50 or 60 feet into the stands down the right field line. I mean, that was all he hit. And, you know, on Wednesday, when he struck out a couple times, the Cubs pitcher got ahead of him in every at bat. And then he struck out on, you know, a couple of high 80s fastballs up in the zone. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't catch him, you know. So that was – so you can kind of see what some of the points you're trying to make just based on those 10 at-bats that I saw.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing I didn't do, it's hard. They used to have spray charts and stuff for minor leaguers Pipeline used to do it. They haven't done it since 2019. I don't know if they forgot that they were doing them after the pandemic year, but you used to be able to look and see the spray charts. So I had to go through the box scores, every one, and look at where the balls were hit. So I had to do that manually. One thing I didn't do is, you know, I split it, and I also split his, when I was making the argument that he's kind of streaky, I split his season into like four or five different parts. What I didn't do was look at the batted ball direction during those streaks. And it may be that when Spencer Torkelson is at his best, he's going to the opposite field. And when he's struggling, he's pulling the ball. I didn't check that. So that's something else I could look into later. But I don't know. Like, we don't need to talk about that too much. I wrote an article, whatever, people had some fun with it. But I don't know. I thought it was worthy of discussion. And like, as we said, hopefully he proves me wrong consistently. And it's something I take with me to the grave.
Yeah.
Chris, here lies Chris Brown. He was wrong about torque.
Hey, let me tell you, this goes way back. The one thing I regret not writing, mm-hmm. and you know, you can take it for what it's worth, when Miguel Cabrera signed the extension, I wanted to write a piece saying, I don't like it. Everybody was praising it. Everybody was happy. I thought it was going to end terribly, and I didn't have the guts to write it because I knew what the backlash would be. And I still think about that all the time. So I think kudos to you for writing it because it was on your mind. You had a good case to make, and you made it.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, and like I said, I wrote a trade piece about him when I first started, like trade Miguel Cabrera, and I got a lot of
crap. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I got a lot of crap for that because of his dead contract. And this is when the NL was talking about having a DH, and I thought that he would be a good spot for a DH in NL, and I got a lot of crap for that. But it was at the same time, it's what the Tigers were doing at the time. They were just getting, you know, if – you know, and we're actually, this is, you know, we're Vango, one of our favorite guys online. If you never write a controversial article, you're not a reporter. You're a fan. Amen, dude. Amen. Thank you.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right.
You almost always regret the ones you don't write more than the ones you do write.
Kind of in the middle there. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a reporter either. But
yeah. Fair, what we do, again, it's just like I hate to say this, but, you know, I'm not hating to say this at all. And I'll say it to anybody out there, just because we have the word blog does not mean we're some uneducated fan idiots. Okay. And I don't care how sore or defensive I get about it. I will get defensive about it. There's a series of people like Uber's piece on over the winter on the front office. And there's other things people don't want to hear because like, you're an angry fan. And but if you put facts in there, they still don't want to hear. It's the way it is. And because you don't have a blue check mark because whatever reasons and you can't get in there. I mean, if we're given access, if it's the difference between getting access and not getting access, that's what makes us different. That's it. Sorry. You have a journalism degree. I have a degree and you've been watching the game for a long time. There is nothing again, just because there's certain title, like a title, you know, anyway.
Well, one thing, I know we're in the middle of our segments, but one thing, while we're talking about articles, you brought an article too about the catching situation. Now we didn't touch about it, that Jake Rogers had Tommy John surgery. So he's gone for obviously the rest of this year and probably at least until next, probably all of next year too. I mean, if you're talking about arms, the catcher is the number two position. You have to worry about it. So
yeah, I'd say he's out for 12 months anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're going to have to, you know, if you go check out Motor City Bengals, check out the alternatives out there. It's not much. Free agency is kind of grim this year when it comes to catching. So,
yeah, it's going to be a stopgap kind of a thing. You know, I think if they could get their hands on Tommy Barnhart or not Tommy,
Tucker
Barnhart. Thank you. He's a nice offensive player. He could be a nice, you know, matchup with Haas. But other than that, you're looking at a lot of the old standbys. I mean, the Jan Gomes types.
So you guys were talking about arms. Let's talk about your nether regions here for the lawn Manscaped 4.0. real quick here, and I'll take care of it, Chris. If you're looking for an out of the world experience, look for no further than the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped. Inside this package, you'll find a lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker for your ear, nose, hair trimmer, crop reverser, ball deodorant, crop reliever tone, performance beast box briefs, which are actually pretty comfortable. I will say that as a Manscaped 4.0 owner. And a travel bag to hold your whole solar system or just your stuff. I you know, so yeah, you don't have to say solar system. But really, it's one. It's the 4.0's trimmer. It's got a light on it. It's got a good motor. It works when it's wet. So if you're shaving your stuff while you're in the shower, that works. And the Weed Whacker is waterproof. It uses a 9,000 RPM motor powered 360 rotary dual blade system. So if you have that crazy ass nose hair, that will work. I'll tell you that right now, because literally I'll trim it one day and the next day it's there. So and of course, if you want to put some, you know, for your special person in your life, the Crop Preserver Ball Dealer and the Crop Reviver help your little plants be on their A game. Wow. Well, so yeah, that's exactly what the copy says. So
no, that's the thing. Go ahead. All right, finish. Get to the promotional code, then we'll talk about it.
All right, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you.
Yeah, all right. So that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, not to criticize. We appreciate our advertisers and so forth. The copy, it's space themed, right? Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's the whole thing. They wanted like a space theme, but I don't think they once talk about shaving Uranus, which feels like isn't that, wouldn't that be very clear to put that in there? Like,
but, some kind of cream for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, but whatever. I once got suspended.
Give him his due. Yeah, give the anus its due. All right.
I got suspended in 10th grade for asking the science teacher if there are rings around your anus. Suspended.
I had a friend who said your anus got a big, told him your anus has a big orbit.
Oh, God. All right. Let's move on.
Let's, yeah. So, anyway.
Oh, that's good.
The bad.
Oh, that's bad.
And the ugly.
All right, it is time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. Chris, what is your good, bad, and ugly?
All right, so my good is kind of a little bit off the board here, but I'm going with Jonathan VR, who he's on the Mets now, if you didn't know. He signed with them last year for 1 year in a $3.5 million plus performance bonuses, which I think he's earning. In the last month, he hit .343 with 5 homers and 4 steals, which has been good for 1.3 war. It's like a 166 WRC plus. And on the season, he's at .263 with 18 homers and 12 steals with a 9.5% walk rate. You know, it's nothing terribly special, but for $3.5 million, that's a pretty good deal. It's a 119 WRC plus and 2.5 WAR to Fangraphs, 2.4 to Baseball Reference. So basically 2.5. So he's basically been as productive for the Mets as Jamer Candelario and Robbie Grossman have been for the Tigers. And he's played 78 games at third, 26 at short, 9 at second. He's been slightly below average defensively, grading out at least. You know, I think UZR has him as a positive at shortstop or second base and a negative everywhere else. And then, you know, StatCast outs above average actually has him as a positive at shortstop. It's basically average, slightly below average. And he seems like he's tapping into more power. And I don't know, the whole thing, it just has kind of a Robbie Grossman feel to me. And like Grossman, he was on the Astros from 2013 to 2015. So he is familiar with AJ Hinch, and he's a free agent this year. So not that I'm saying like, hey, Jonathan VR, shortstop of the future, but I don't know, for, you know, say they strike out on the other shortstops, or say they really do believe in Ryan Kreidler as the shortstop of the future. I know people don't want to hear that. He does, you know, he's been pretty awesome in AAA so far, though. Yeah. You know, maybe a 1 year deal for VR. As a utility infielder, something like that, just a moderate improvement across the board would be interesting. He's been pretty good this year, but he is a strange player who's had 3 years, not including this year, before where he's been a 2 WAR player, at least one with 3, one with 4. But he's also had a couple years where he's a negative WAR player. So I don't know. And there were times when I think he was even on the waiver wire and the Tigers didn't add him. So I don't know, but just thought maybe there might be a little hint relationship there. So. You know, mildly good. The bad is the Yankees. What in the world happened? 2 weeks ago, they're the hottest team in baseball. They had a 13-game winning streak. They were 21-4 at that point in August. And they were within 4 games of first place, and now I'm checking to see what they're doing tonight. New York, North Carolina, and Compton. So they are down 4-2 right now with the bases loaded and 2 outs at the top of the 8th. They are on the verge of getting swept by the Blue Jays. They have lost 9 of 11 And they've gone from so they've lost five in a row. They've gone from they're back in third in the AL East. Boston has passed them. They're 10 games out of first place now. Seems like the offense has been a big issue. Third worst offensive WAR in the last 2 weeks. They're batting just .223 as a team, but they're also having real bullpen issues. They've in the last 2 weeks they have 11 bullpen meltdowns to just 12 shutdowns. And if people don't know what those are, I'm sure we've mentioned before, but in case you're not refreshed, it's kind of the sabermetric equivalent of saves, if you will, and blown saves. So a shutdown is when a reliever comes into the game and improves the team's chances of winning by 6% or more.
Hmm.
And the meltdown is when they come into the game and decrease the team's chances of winning by 6% or more. So there's basically 1-1 so far this year. And really good relievers are like 5-1. I think Josh Hader is at like 38-3 this year, shutdown to meltdown.
Wow.
And most good relievers are at least 3-1. If you look at the Tigers, like four solid relievers, Soto, Cisnero, Fulmer, and Funkhauser, they're all above 3-1, close to 4-1. So going 1-1 is really bad. And I mean, I think that's what's going on with the Yankees, and it's kind of hard. I'm sure the New York fans are taking things in stride.
Oh, definitely. They don't melt down at all. No, they're totally calm and rational people that totally 100%. If it wasn't for Derek Jeter getting the Hall of Fame today or this week, I think Yankee fans would be the Yankees Twitter and Mets Twitter is something to be behold, ladies and gentlemen. You think Tigers Twitter is strange? Ooh, all right. And what was your
Speaking of strange, my ugly is this Hunter Renfro Major League Baseball story. I don't know if you guys have seen this. There was an article up on FanSided that went up today about Hunter Renfro went on a radio show. You know, the Red Sox have had all sorts of COVID issues lately.
Yeah.
They've been calling players up, and I think Taylor Motter was on the team for like 2 days, and then they designated him. It's just been kind of bizarre.
Taylor Motter, that's a name I've heard in a long time.
Maybe I'm incorrect there, but.
No, you're right. He was there.
So Hunter Renfro was on a radio show with old baseball player Lou Maroney, and I don't know if it's Christian Fourier or whoever it is, but he said MLB basically told us to stop the testing and just treat the symptoms. We're like, no, we're going to figure out what's going on and keep this under control. So Maroney said, MLB asked you to stop testing, and Renfro said yes. So that caused that caused some real issues, and an MLB spokesman told the Boston Globe he is completely wrong and inaccurate. And then the Red Sox released a statement from a spokesman, and this is from quoting that article on FanSided, that said, we have been following MLB's COVID-19 protocols all season long. We've consulted closely with them on everything we've done and continue to test, and their medical staff has been very supportive. And that's Chris Cotillo. Chris Cotillo reported that. Roger, you're familiar with him. So,
yeah
it's a very strange situation. I don't know why Hunter Renfro would lie about that. I wouldn't put it past a baseball player to not be entirely in on everything that's going on. And I also don't know why Major League – I do know why Major League Baseball would lie about that. They don't want it to look like they're being reckless. But, I don't know. It's just kind of an ugly situation. I don't know how much uglier it's going to get there, but it's just been something that's kind of strange to me.
It'll be interesting to hear what the next – if there's any more follow-up from it.
Yeah.
I kind of believe he just – he heard one little nugget of information and extrapolated that into there's a big cover-up going on now.
Yeah, they told us to stop testing and also stop testing for steroids and no more sticky stuff. But
you never know.
Dry clubhouses.
There you go.
All right, Uber, what is your good and bad ugly this week?
Okay, good. I got three little things on good. One is the Miggy going 7-for-7 here. Pretty cool. I don't remember the last Tiger who did it. Did anybody hear that, though?
I thought they said Infante did it.
Okay. Well, anytime you're on the same list as Omar Infante, that's pretty good.
Rare error right there.
Hey, but still, 7-for-7 for Miggy. Let's hope he keeps his nice hot stretch going. My other one is Max Scherzer. Since the trade, 5-0, 1.05 ERA with the Dodgers. Just vintage Max Scherzer. I don't know if you've watched any innings since he got traded, but you know, he basically looks the same as he did when he was 29 years old. Just ageless wonder. Just love watching him. I'll always be a fan of the guy, so that's probably why I'm going about it a little bit right now. But there's really no way to exaggerate how good he looks at the moment. Then off the beaten path, people know who know me know I'm of Finnish descent. The Finnish Baseball League. I'm the only person in America who follows this. It's basically the
confirmed.
It's basically about high school level baseball on these old ratty fields. But I started following it online during quarantine, basically because I had nothing else to do. The Tampa Tigers, I chose the Tigers for obvious reasons, are in the Finnish Championship Series starting tomorrow. Best of five, Tampa Tigers versus the Espoo Expos. So tune in, watch that online. You can find that live on Facebook. I know you will.
Now, not to interrupt you, but is this Pesäpallo? The Finnish? No, so this is actual baseball.
This is real baseball.
Okay.
And I actually know one of the umpires. I know him personally, but I know him from a Facebook umpire chat room. He actually sought me out because he saw my name as a Finnish descent. So we were talking about umpiring, and he's actually going to be working at least two of these games in this series. So kind of fun. I follow the Finnish national team. They go to the European championships and they get their butts kicked every year. Baseball is just kind of catching on in Finland. But it's amazing, you know, every country over there is represented. And you see some of the pictures, some of the countries have really nice fields. You know, countries like Estonia and Lithuania and Switzerland have beautiful ballparks. So who knew? So bad. My last, you know, as good as it was to go watch the Mud Hens and see the Tigers, hopefully future stars, was to see the depleted roster Des Moines folks who are Cubs fans have to watch on that AAA team. I mean, I was talking to a guy in front of me who was a softball coach at Urbandale High School here, and he has season tickets, and he sits right by the dugout every game. And he said this is the worst thing he's ever seen. He's really had to drag himself to the ballpark this summer to see a few of those games. So there was literally not one person I was interested in watching on that Cubs roster. So that was kind of bad. And then the ugly, I was surprised to hear today that Jack Morris is coming back after 10 games off. You know, where does that come from? What you're telling me that this must have been the greatest training session of all time. He's a new man, evidently. To me, it's not even a slap on the wrist. He basically got a little 2-week vacation, you know. And again, it was just one slip of the tongue. But with him, you know, the track record being what it is, I don't know if it's a slip of the tongue. I was surprised he got back after 10 games. And I don't think that was the greatest decision of all time.
I agree with you on that. And I was surprised. I thought he would honestly be out the rest of the year. Can you explain this, what this is, Uber, we're watching on the screen right now? Is this Finnish baseball? Or is this different?
This is Pesäpallo.
Okay.
And it's a pretty fun game. I mean, they're jumping around and they're spiking the ball. And it's almost like a cross between cricket and baseball.
This looks a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, it's some craziness going on.
Everyone's got their hands up. And
The crowd goes nuts. It's kind of fun. I really don't know the rules. I just know people are taking, you know, like the Jeter jump throw. Some people do like a jump swing at some balls.
Yeah. And here it is right now.
Look here. The pitcher is kind of right where the catcher is. We did a whole segment on Pesäpallo.
Yeah.
Wow. It was like my third episode of Bad Hop Radio. And I learned all about the game. And I was like, this is fascinating. And like they run in a weird crooked pattern. That's like, It's very interesting, but yeah, I kind of lost track of it since then.
And a lot of the Finnish Baseball League is made up of former Pesäpallo players.
And there are weird, like, color flags that they hold up. But, yeah. It's very...
The refs on the sign up, but the crowd is... It's a packed crowd here, too. Look at the way the pitches and woof.
That guy was holding the bat.
Swing. Yeah.
He was swinging it cross-handed. Did you see that?
Yeah, that was crazy. Okay, I just wanted to... Okay, just want to double-check what that was, so... Not to get too sidetracked, but yeah, I was kind of disappointed with Jack Morris as well, because whether what he said or not, it's just, to me, 10 games, just Craig Monroe was doing a good job. Dan Pietschy was doing fine. Of course, Craig Monroe with Dan Dickerson and Petrie on the TV side of things. But
yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with. I mean, I've never liked Jack Morris as an announcer, so I'd rather him not come back because I just don't like him. I don't necessarily have a problem with him like serving a punishment and coming back from that. I don't understand I don't know what the rush is. Like what? Right. Yeah, what? We got to get Morris back in that booth. Our ratings are plummeting. Like, is that possible? I can't imagine. But
yeah,
I don't know.
So my good is Jose Berrios, who pitched a game tonight, and was watching the Jays and Yankees game earlier before the podcast. And one of the things they mentioned on the Yankees on the broadcast was that Berrios is pitching with his arms down versus when he goes in his windup, and that's helped him, as he was talking about that, it would help him with his release point stay more on. So when he drives the ball in, so it's made a difference for him. As really in the last couple, since he's come over with the Jays, he is 3-2. The record, you know, don't worry about wins and losses here necessarily. He's got 43 strikeouts, so it's got 10 K per nine of 10.18, and he's got a FIP of 3.22, and an ERA 3.79. So he's done exactly what the Jays need him to do, which is pitch down the stretch very well, and they have him for another year next year. So that bodes well for Toronto next year. The bad is also Toronto too, because they're game and a half of the American League's final wild card spot, with 24 games left to play, because the Jays have to, and they could, and this is off. I got this article. That's information based from Fifth Third Eight's forecast model. They have to give the Jays a 46% probability of making the playoffs, because they have to leapfrog the Yankees or the Red Sox, while also worrying about the A's and the Mariners, which still blows my mind. And the Mariners, I mean, the A's this week got really good. Sean,
Manaea?
Manaea. 9 strikeouts. It was clutch against the White Sox. Just made the White Sox look foolish earlier. And it's just going to feel bad for the Jays. I mean, they're a fun team to watch. They're a really good, fun team. I like watching the Jays. They have a really young talent core. And they're getting kind of hosed a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at if they win tonight, they're only a half game out. Behind the Yankees, there's two men on and nobody out right now, last I checked. But I'm sure everybody else has thought about this all year long, but it just kind of occurred to me, like, wow, they're doing this despite playing in 3 different home parks this year.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of remarkable to think about.
I didn't even think about that. They played in Dunedin and Buffalo.
And now they're up in Toronto. So it's been a peripatetic season for the Blue Jays. And for them to turn it on now would be kind of cool. And, you know, I'm sure whenever there's a young team like that coming up and like you'd like to see them make progress and make the playoffs and stuff. And then once they have that, then you can, you know, root for failure. So after the Jays make it, squeak in this year, then in the future, you can be like, yeah, no more for you. But for now, yeah, I'd like to see them get in there.
You know, if they get in a wild card game and they can finagle their rotation to get Robbie Ray starting that game, guy has been money this year. I mean, he has been grinding out start after start after start with quality start, 10 strikeouts or more. I mean, he's just been a machine. I don't know anybody saw that coming. If he gets to start that game, they're going to be a tough out.
It's a sneaky, scary rotation with Manoa and Berrios and Ryu. And Ray. There's a talented team right there. It's just they just got to get in. Okay. Got to get over the hump.
I think they will. I think they can overcome this right now. I really think their chances are getting better. And my ugly is former Tiger Delman Young, who was arrested on Monday night on domestic violence and other charges in Florida. Did you guys hear about this at all?
I missed that, and it sucks.
Yeah. The incident occurred in Davie, Florida, involved him and his woman claiming to be the former outfielder's ex-girlfriend, according to TMZ Sports. The woman said that Young began to bang on a door late Monday night. When she demanded he stop, he allegedly punched her in the chest and shoved her to the ground as she tried to run away. The police said their surveillance footage showed Young striking a woman and sped off his car and drove through a stop sign while driving 90 in a 45-mile-an-hour zone. So the woman called 911 and alleged Young was trying to kill her, according to TMZ Sports. She also claimed that she had blood all over her and Young punched her in the face. So that, if you're wondering what outside of Australian baseball is going on with Dylan Young, well, there you go. So pretty ugly.
That's, yeah. I mean, he just seems like not a good dude. I mean, we knew that when he assaulted that person in New York, and it sucks, you know.
He threw the bat at the umpire that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, such a talented kid, and he lacked discipline on and off the field, and here you go. You know, he's first overall pick, ends up with less than 4 career WAR, and now he's out here. You know, I hope he's dealt with in the justice system and you know, yeah, doesn't get any benefit from being a former player. But, yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, we were talking about the Phillies earlier. Here's a fun number for you. Ian Kennedy allowed 5 home runs in 32 and one-thirds innings with the Rangers. He's allowed 6 in 13.2-thirds innings with the Phillies.
There's that's that Dombrowski bullpen magic.
Yeah. More like voodoo, if you think about it.
I know.
You have any questions this week, Chris? I don't think we did.
I didn't even know if anybody was watching this week.
Yeah, we got people. We have people watching. We have
all right, so I
say stream here.
Okay, so yeah, I guess it would show me before when I was logged in. I'm not logged in now, so I don't see that.
But we haven't gotten questions either. Also, you got to think about it this way. Tonight's the opening night of NFL football.
Yeah.
Which people, I mean like NFL's king. Let's not face ourselves here. I mean, who's Tampa and who's playing Tampa and
Dallas.
Dallas
and Tampa.
Of course, everybody around here recognizes that the Lions kick off the season on Sunday. So there you go. But if you have any, I didn't see any questions today, so.
Yeah, it's fine, man.
Yeah. And the Tigers take on the Rays this weekend, starting tomorrow. You know, we'll be out there checking that out. And I couldn't think of anything else. I think that's it for
this. You said you're heading out to another game on Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday, right?
It's supposed to be 95 degrees here on Saturday, so that should be fun.
Ooh.
Always the first 2 innings at these Iowa Cubs games are, if it's a sunny day, are very hard for offense. There's a huge glare early in the game that goes away.
They were saying on the broadcast, and I was enjoying the MILB team broadcast. It was, I think, Steve. It's not Steve Cohen. Steve Cohen's the Mets owner. There's a Cohen guy and healthy running backs for the Ravens.
You know, Do the Ravens have the Dave Dombrowski voodoo magic on them? What was it? They got Bell going. So, I mean, if you picked him up late in waiver wires, which is why I haven't done highlights the last couple of days, because I've been doing fantasy drafts, admittedly.
Really? I feel like the Ravens have a pretty good running quarterback, but what do I know? But it probably helps to have a running back to take some of the. But as I was saying, yeah, they said there's no batter's eye in Iowa, and you could see the state capitol dome, which is like gold, as all state capitals must be apparently. And so you can see that right in center field. So yeah, that's one of those things. Like, just another thing you don't ever really think about when you look at minor league stats, like what these players are actually seeing. It's a ball coming out of the state capitol.
Yeah, you know, even for they've never seen any of these pitchers before. These are all brand new guys, you know. So you're kind of winging it for a couple of them, always.
Yeah, and the guy they got tonight was owning them. Last I checked, I think I told you. Yeah, it's 5-0. Torkelson just grounded out. Riley Green, what did he do? Riley Green doubled on a line drive to left fielder. So Green and Torker both 1-for-4 with 2 strikeouts and a double.
Yeah, West Michigan's playing a Great Lakes team who, by the way, is still stacked. Great Lakes all year. The Loons have been stacked. It's Andy Bejas is still there, who's got 25 home runs or 26 home runs. They're an offensive juggernaut, and it's mind blowing. But Michael, you're absolutely right. If you had told me that Tyrod Taylor would be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans coming out of this preseason, I would have told you were high. And that's what's going on right now. But because Deshaun Watson likes to air pump people or whatever the hell's going on over there, and
air pump
thrusting and anyway.
Oh yeah, it turns out that there might not be good people in every discipline. I look at, you know, I basically quit the NFL after 2018, and I know nothing about the league anymore.
Outside the headlines, honestly, the more I delved into baseball, the more I could care less about the football. I have to say, I mean, I have a Detroit Lions poster that my neighbor gave me, and my, you know, somewhere we're going to put it up. I don't know where, But I mean, if you notice my office, my studio, not much football going on in here. So that's, pardon me.
I'll follow the Packers after the World Series. And I've been to Lambeau Field like 34 times in my life, you know, but I used to have really good connections on tickets, but I've kind of fallen out of football a little bit too. Once the World Series is done, if the Packers are in it, I'll pay some attention, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Kinnick when I saw Michigan play, and that's a great venue for a football game. Mm-hmm. College football is something I'm getting back into slowly but surely, but we'll see what happens.
I may be in Ann Arbor on Saturday night. We'll see.
Oh, really? I'm going to South Bend for the Notre Dame Toledo game on Saturday because a buddy of mine is a Toledo alum, and I've always wanted to check out a game at Notre Dame. Always have, despite my hatred for that school, because Notre Dame fans will let you know they're Notre Dame fans, and they went there, and they're not afraid to tell you about it. They're actually
the one that's different than Michigan.
This is true. This is true.
When I was in college in Michigan.
Well, you know, even like I went to U of M Dearborn, and they'll be like, "Whoa, you didn't go to Ann Arbor." Well, I mean, if I'm looking at my degree, which is right above me right now, it has University of Michigan from Mary Sue Coleman. So kiss my ass.
Well, also, the older you get, the more you realize that you can go to whatever college you want if you give them enough money. You can give them enough money, and they're like, "Sure, here's your Harvard diploma."
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. I mean, if you go to the University of Phoenix, you know. or Grand Canyon University, whatever school that
they got a good baseball team.
Yeah, there you go. And they also have really a good online presence, apparently. So, or what's the other one? That's South New Hampshire, I've seen online. Hampshire. Yeah. So whatever school you go from, it doesn't. You know, it's funny just how much status that clout that brings. But anyway, I think we're done for the evening. So thanks so much for listening. If you watch us on YouTube and Facebook, thank you so much for participating, sending questions. Of course, we're Vango, Michael Mayer. I was waiting for him. I didn't hear from him this evening. I'm like, oh, maybe Michael's watching football. And then I'm like realizing that I don't know. I was like, no, he's a Ravens fan. So he wouldn't give a crap about the, you know, Tom Brady and the, Tampa Bay. I just drew a blank. See, this is what I'm saying. Like football, until now, it's like my younger brother's been giving me fantasy football advice. If it wasn't for him, and my friend Larry, I would have been screwed. And you know what, Michael, you're absolutely right. Eastern's kind of a concrete slab, right?
Rynearson?
Yeah, Rynearson. So,
yeah, you know, I haven't been there in, I don't know, 25 years. It's funny, I grew up in the shadow of Eastern Michigan. I'm sure I've told this before, but like I didn't understand that people were Michigan State fans when I was growing up. It was either Michigan or Eastern Michigan fans. I was in like the one square block where you actually had Eastern Michigan fans. My best friends back then, their dad was the sports information director for EMU. So we would get into the football games for free, and it was like the greatest experience for me because we'd be up in the press box eating all the big sandwiches and like and back
cheer
then.
Cheer on the Hurons.
Yeah, and back then the Hurons, they had good basketball teams in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, they had Earl Bo- or who was before Earl?
It was Boykins. It was before Boykins. They had the Carl and Charles Thomas.
Yes, that's right.
Lorenzo Carl Thomas. Yeah, that's right.
Lorenzo Neely, I think his name was. Yeah. And then they had, a couple years later, it was Earl Boykins and Derek Dial. They were good teams, but back then it was funny. It's just like my early sports experiences are so different than now. They at the first basket of every Eastern Michigan game, the fans in the student section would throw rolls of toilet paper onto the field every time. On the field, onto the court. And it was just expected. As soon as they scored a basket, out come the toilet paper, they pause the game, they pick it up, and they continue. And now you'd get, arrested for doing that. So,
yeah, they had those old, they had the green uniform, those really green and white uniforms. It's kind of, they look like very similar to Michigan State. But, there's a lot of, I mean, Michigan on a Saturday is ideal. It's such a great atmosphere for a football game, and same thing with Michigan State. So I've been to a couple games in Michigan State, and I still have to go to Western. That's my next bucket list. Western, go out to the game in Kalamazoo or Central Michigan. That's on my list. So,
oh no, you gotta get up to Michigan Tech.
At some point, I would like to see a Huskies game. I've been, you probably did when I went to the UP for when I did broadcasting a couple years ago. I did go to a Michigan Tech hockey game. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. The band with the the stripes and their all those outfits they're wearing.
Yep,
they really get up for Chris. I'm telling you, it's one of those experiences where it was better than like a pro hockey game. Like it was packed, people were just cheering on, and they're playing. They're playing Northern Michigan, so it was a rivalry game, and it was like the but that band with what just stood out to me was just that uniform they're wearing, the band with the stripes and just
the coveralls,
the drum, the coveralls. Thank you, coveralls. I couldn't think of that. The coveralls stand out. I mean, you can't miss them. They're from a mile away. You're like, wow.
And it's and they put on a show. They put on a show themselves. Even in years where they had bad hockey teams, the band was worth being there.
No, absolutely, absolutely, Uper. You're dead on about that. And that I love marching band. I never played. I'm tone deaf as it come, but I have appreciation for that because it's so cool. The coordination of everything, and I'm uncoordinated. Oh, yeah. I trip and fall over myself all the time, and.
And shout out to Titus Tiger for putting out some sort of weird animated gif of us banging drums. It was very odd to me.
Titus Tiger rules. That guy rules or person. But
in terms of football stadiums, get up to Northern Michigan. They have the Superior Dome.
And it's
the only dome stadium made out of wood.
Really?
In the world? I think anywhere. Wow. And it's a beautiful building. And it's
like the Mean Streak.
They have the state championships, don't they, for the UP, usually, Uper?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Before they head down state for more games.
Yeah, the Superior. Yeah, that's a intimidating place. Very intimidating place, from my understanding. So, thanks so much for rambling on with us as we were talking about Northern Michigan and all these football stadiums. Thanks again for everybody participating. We'll back next week. We'll be announcing a winner on Twitter. So, go to our Twitter, Tigers ML Report. Well, that's for the minor league account, but if you want to go follow us on Twitter, Tigers Radio Pod. Of course, you can follow us on MotorCityBengals.com at MCB_Tigers. Go to our website, MotorCityBengals.com. Check out our great talent, great content. Danielle is posting a story tomorrow, which I still have to edit. But nevertheless, have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.